Here we are again, and we are diving into skill 8 today. We are in this series on the 12 learnable skills of leadership, of leaders. And you might be listening into this podcast, or you might be one of those in the coaching program. Now, before I dive in, I feel like I just got to express a little bit and connect with you. It's raining as I record this, and I work so much better on writing when it's raining. So my brain has so much of the current book I'm working on in it. And when I say working on, it means that yes, I am writing it, but I also have help. I gladly put the names of others on my books because no book is a solo effort. I had a guy that joked with me, I don't consider myself the best writer and I have to work hard, but I'm passionate to get those concepts out. And he goes, Chris's ghostwriters need ghostwriters. And it feels true, but awesome people that are helping me. And so can't wait. A little behind where I'd like to be on that, but still moving forward. And so as I dive into today's episode, I have a ton of stories that are new stories that are going in that book that I'm resisting the urge to share on this podcast where they fit because I want to wait and have them in the book. And, you know, if you have been through the coaching with me, I've got an idea on getting this book out. So I'll be reaching out to you sometime in the coming days. You know, this is July. This will be end of July, beginning of August when this podcast goes live of 2017. And so if you've been through the coaching, I'll be reaching out to you about that. But let's get into it. So if you look at a big picture view of what we're doing with these 12 learnable skills, the first four are about getting yourself in tip-top shape, ready to lead. The next four are about what you're doing that actually impacts others. And then the last four are going to be how you always keep moving it forward. So we're in this second section of the skills, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And they're about, really, we could boil it down to one concept. It's the impact of others. And the way that you impact others as a leader is with vision. You know, I've shared this with you before, but I'm going to share it again because we forget. I'm going to model the point that I'm about to make. Jack Welch at GE talked about how he would share the vision so much he just felt like he was going to puke because he had said it so many times. And I've said that to you multiple times on this podcast, and I'm saying it again because you just keep coming back to vision. You keep coming back to vision. You're never done with the vision. Vision leaks. It's fragile. A misalignment occurs. And so what we did in skill 6 was we talked about we're not going to be surprised by people's reactions. We're going to know that they're going to react certain ways to what we're going to share. And we want to prepare for that, right? And then I talked to you about how you want to validate. That was last skill, skill 7, the perception piece of that. How you tune into them. Now, this skill, skill 8, is about how you tune them into you. So you've tuned into them, skill 7. Now you're going to tune them into you. And so there are always times in leadership, you know, where one action could be right in this moment, but the opposite action could be right in the next moment, right? So I think about management. Like, management is black and white. In this meeting, you said you would have this done by this day, did you? The more black and white you are in management of others, the more effective and better you'll be. You'll be a stable, consistent person people can count on. Leadership is different. It's all gray. There are so many different answers. And so the way that I'm titling this is you're attuning, right? You're getting them to tune into you. And I know how I'm using that word intentionally. Usually we think about attuning, that we're attuning to the others. No, we're going to attune them to us. We're going to be like a pitchfork, and we're going to hit that note and let them come to us because we have perceived where they are. That's the last skill. But the subtitle of this is flirt or punch on the nose. And a lot of leadership, when you're putting vision out there and you're getting people to attune to you, there's a time to flirt the issue out, to let them come to a conclusion, to leave breadcrumbs, let the light bulbs go off, let them have epiphanies. And there is also a time to punch that issue on the nose, to lead with some strength and clarity that says, I'll tell you what we're going to do. And we want to learn when to do what. So this is skill 8. That's what we're diving into. Now, the external problem that blocks people up from living out this skill of attuning the room to them. You know, we talked about perceiving the room, last skill. This is about moving the room where you need it to go in this skill, or the audience, or the people, or the individual, or the meeting, or whatever. So you validate that perception. Now you want to get them to follow you. And here's what blocks it up. You use the same approach in every situation. That's it. To attune people means we're going to get where they are. We're going to perceive what's going on, and then we're going to cater our approach around what they need. And so here's what blocks this up. Here's what keeps people from being able to be intelligent on this and to cater their approach. The reason they just keep using the same approach, and it goes back to where we talked about you've got to be willing to be misunderstood. The reason you're leading is because you have a vision. You see something that needs to happen. You feel something that needs to happen. You are dialed in, and this vision must go forth. You've got that idea for the business. You've got the strategy change that needs to happen. You've got the cause that's really important. And so what happens is you don't slow down and hear people long enough, which is why we said skill 7, we perceive, and we just miss the cues. We don't hear, we don't see, we don't feel the other. We're so consumed with our vision, we miss them. It's kind of like when you're in a conversation and you don't hear what the person is saying, you're already formulating your response. Skill 7 is about fully hearing what the person says, so that skill 8, we cater the response to what they need. Look, people want to be seen, heard, and felt. It's a human-to-human connection. And if you're so consumed with the vision, you don't give them that, you will miss the opportunity to lead when it is most needed. You won't be able to get the team to buy in. You won't have that moment captured and seized as it needs to be. I don't know if you can hear that on the podcast. We just had some big rumbling Midwest thunder. And it just has given me all the good vibes. I wish I could figure out a way to make it cloudy and rainy on days I need to create, because it is some good stuff for me. One of the things when people will reach out to me and they'll tell me about their problem that they're facing and then how they want to solve it, how they usually want to solve it is by being too passive or too active, some kind of brute force. You know, they're really going to display anger, or they're really going to just hope they figure it out. And I always like to joke back in my responses and go, yeah, because in the history of humanity, that approach has worked brilliant. In the history of humanity, people have just figured it out without getting a vision. No, they don't. You know, we would not be where we are as a society with human rights, and we've got a long way to go still, and with the progressiveness of recognizing where people are and the validation they need to be a part of the human race, accepted and loved, we would not be where we are without leaders giving us a vision, leading the way, championing a cause. We need leaders, right? But then sometimes people lead too aggressively, and so, you know, if what you're doing isn't working, you've got to be willing to change up your approach. Here is the simplest way I can state the truth of today's podcast. You must become a multi-terrain leader. You got to lead well in the mountains, high up in that vision. You got to lead well in the valley when you got to give tons of support and love and encouragement. And you got to lead well in the in-between moments, when you're not necessarily being passionate about that encouragement or comfort or passionate about the vision, but it's just a place to be dialed down as we make this climb. And here's the reality. If you don't become a multi-terrain leader, people either tune out or tune in. There's no middle with the vision. And so whatever you have that's in you is not going to happen. What you're trying to build, what you would like to see accomplished, what you would like to see move forward. And I've persisted in moments way too long, going, I'm just going to keep hammering at this and they're going to hear it. I remember one time I was leading in an organization and we had a meeting the next day. You know, I'm like gosh, 22 years old, way too young to be in the place that I was. But I'm thankful for that moment now because it was definitely a baptism by fire. And, you know, my wife and I, we had recently got married. We had built this house. I remember I'm sitting on the deck of this house. It's like this acre of land and this beautiful scenery. And it went down to this creek and I could see deer and turkeys. And it was just really, really cool. So I'd love to sit on this deck. And I'm sitting out on this deck and I've got music playing. It's late at night and I'm searching for how to catalyze the people. The meeting the next day, I needed to be able to lay out a vision that was going to really inspire them to take the next step. And I didn't have much of one, but, you know, this was back before, the internet was exploding. Gosh, this was probably in 2000 and yeah, about 2000. And so anyway, I'm sitting on the deck and that'll detail will come into play here in a second. And I remember thinking, I just don't want to be like the same genre of organizations in the phone book. I don't want to just be one more thing in the phone book, like all these other companies or organizations. And I wanted us to be different, not just different for different sake, but because we had a purpose. And, you know, I think I sat out there like 3 a.m. and that thought hit me. It's like, I don't want to just be like everybody else. And I tried to explain that, but I didn't let them, okay, hear from me in a way that I was catering my approach to them. I was just expressing the passion of it, right? It's like this emotional vomiting. And I'm like, oh, I'm feeling all this so intense. Join me in it. And I stayed a little while longer and helped that organization make a turn, but ultimately had to come to the conclusion that I couldn't stay long term because I spilled so much blood and energy going, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me. So I tried to make up for a lack of clarity with intensity. It's a huge idea. There's no middle with the vision. People either tune you out or tune you in. And if you're having to like try to yell louder to get them to hear you, you're failing to become a multi-terrain leader. And I've done that. So I now look at it and go, how do I cater my approach to where people are after I've perceived where they are so that they can hear and feel and see what I'm saying, the vision. Now, to do that, let's apply it. Now, for me to apply this, I'm going to walk you through 5 actions that are related. And I'm going to walk through these 5 actions to help you apply this. 2 of these actions are so huge, I'm planning, as I record this right now, to do supplemental episodes on those, okay? So I'm going to give a light overview of it now, and then following this episode will be a supplemental overview if you want more. And I want you to be able to go into this as deep as you want on it, all right? So application number 1, if you're going to be a multi-terrain leader, you're not going to try to use the same approach. You're going to cater to where people are so that they can hear you. You're going to attune. You're going to know that there's a time to flirt and there's a time to punch it on the nose. Number 1, it's this. Develop your ability to move in and out of the meta roles. Develop your ability to move in and out of the meta roles. And I'll tell you how to do that. The meta roles, it goes back to what's in chapter 10 of the book, Figure That Shift Out, where I talk about, for those of you that went through the 12-week coaching. Of course, if you're in the leadership program, you had to go through that to be in the leadership coaching. But I talk about the leader, the empath, and the sage. Remember, there are always insecure leaders that under stress go to their default mode, which maybe it's leading and they just solve things and fill the space with their power and presence. Or maybe it's being the empath and they really just pay attention to the presence of others. Maybe it's being the sage. They learn to create space that others can fill. I'll break this leader empath sage down a little bit more right now, but all 3 of these capture the best of what I know in how to express catering your approach to others. Catering your approach, this live mix, it's so powerful for me when I break it down into these 3 concepts because it gives me a concrete way to understand I am Chris. I tend to, in my roles, run to the leader role the quickest, especially when stressed. But because I am Chris, my identity is separate from the role I'm fulfilling. I can also embrace the empath. I can also embrace the sage. Now, I have hours of content that I can teach just on these three. So I'm just going to do a high-level view, like I said, and then I'll have a supplemental episode just on the meta roles to follow this one. But when you are developing yourself as a leader, there's a time to be like the sage, to let people come to the insight, to flirt it out. There's a time to be the leader, to punch that issue on the nose. There's a time to verbalize the tension and say, hey, as I lay out this new direction, I'm anticipating this tension. Or maybe you're managing the person that is in the retail setting with you, and you're the manager, and you've got to give them strong direction on something. Go, hey, when the customer does this, look, I'm glad you're here. But when you do that back to the customer and you react that way, it puts a bad taste in their mouth. I want you to handle it this way. So you give them this really direct feedback and this very clear coaching. Well, then you've got to work beside them for another 4 hours, right? And there's a tension that's there. Maybe this is a time to punch that issue on the nose, to verbalize the tension. Go, look, I know I just corrected that, and we're going to work together the next 4 hours. It'd be way easier for me just to go back into the back room and sit in the office and just avoid you because we just had this corrective moment. I don't want to do that, right? I need to be up front here with you. We've got a lot of customers we're expecting. So I'm just going to verbalize what you might be feeling. Developing the meta roles. So let me just break this down a little bit more for you. If you are naturally more empathic and you know how to meet people where they are emotionally, you can give the comfort and the presence, and you struggle bringing the direction or the leadership, that's, you know, not going to be what you normally do under tension. You just need to know that you're not a meanie if you lead with strength. Being a strong leader doesn't imply you're a mean person. If you naturally drift towards being a leader and giving the direction, you're not failing to lead if you spend a lot of time in an interaction or a conversation or a meeting comforting what people are concerned about. You're not failing to lead if you let them come to some conclusions on their own, if you tell some stories and invite their own light bulb moments to happen. And you need to know that if you are that sage, you're the relaxed leader who lets people come to conclusions on their own very often, that if you don't cater your approach and sometimes make the conclusion for them, or if you don't bring the really strong direction, this is the moment we're in and this is what we're going to do, then you're going to fail to cater your approach as it's needed. I like to think about like Winston Churchill in this moment because he was a great wartime leader. He brought what he needed to bring in that wartime moment. And he's not regarded as highly in his ability to be a peacetime leader because he couldn't change his approach, right? He's activated by that, and he's at his best at wartime. If you're going to lead for the long haul, especially in today's environment where so much changes, if you're going to be as effective as you can be for, you know, the longevity of your leadership, then it's understanding there are peacetime moments and there are wartime moments. And know which one you're in and how to gauge and switch and cater as needed. If you've got some kind of change that you're introducing, you know, find out what they think reality is. That was the perception. How? Throw down the change plan and then watch them react. Or ask them as a sage what changes they anticipate needing to be made. Or maybe you just seek where they are troubled, and those are some changes that need to be made. I mean, there's just 1,000 ways to describe what these three look like. But if you can learn how to change the approach, and if you want more on this, Leader, Empath, Sage, check out the supplemental episode. But if you can learn how to develop yourself to move in and out of these meta roles, then what you're going to be able to do is cater your approach. Now, if you struggle with any of these, if you haven't really worked on it and developed them, then what you can do, and I'll give you more on this in the supplemental episode, get in the mirror and practice saying the things that that role would say so that you can get over some of the awkwardness of it. So if you struggle being the empath and going, oh, I'm so sorry, and not going into solution, practice statements of empathy and validation. If you struggle giving strong direction, practice statements of strong direction. You say, what would those statements be? Look around you for people that you're inspired by that emulate one of these meta roles, right? I remember, like, so the leader part was really developing for me. And I remember I had a person on my team, and he reported to me, but he was amazing at the sage role, like letting people come to their own conclusions. So I studied him like crazy. I watched how he did it and watched how he would lead in a meeting. I would have him lead meetings I sat in on. And I let him instruct me that way. It was beautiful. So look for somebody that emulates that. So number one, develop the meta roles if you're going to cater your approach. Number two, develop your ability to tell a story. Now, I talked about this in the podcast last year in these 12 learnable leadership skills. I can't overstate the importance of how critical it is for you to be able to tell a story. This is the second supplemental episode I'm going to do for this skill. So I'm going to do a whole thing on how to develop your storytelling ability. So let me just go into it in a briefer overview way right now. When you're speaking, you've got to acknowledge people's reality. If you can't acknowledge their reality, your story doesn't matter. So the story you tell has to be connected to the reality they feel. Even if you never state explicitly, like, this is your reality and I acknowledge it, your story has to sync up with their reality. That's why the last skill was perceiving the room. It gets you set up to tell the story. I see a lot of people that have a desire to grow their leadership. These aren't people I necessarily work with. It's more when I'm sitting in on team meetings. And they're just a little sloppy at the edge. Okay, they're sloppy at the edges. They don't get things in right when they say they will, and they don't run through the tape to do things with a high level of quality and excellence. That tends to be common in the world. Again, I feel like I work with amazing people. The thing that I see people that I work with that can be a little bit sloppy at the edges sometimes, it's when they just speak in a way to get through the moment, but it's got an inauthenticity to it. Now, I talked about this in the last skill, but I just want to elevate the importance of it. Your ability to tell a story that acknowledges their reality and comes from a core place of truth within you is so huge. When your story syncs up with their reality, you're going to connect to their world. When it comes from a place of your truth, there's a congruence, a conviction, a passion that people follow. It's undeniable. And your storytelling ability is so key. So some of you that I'm working with on this that are in the coaching, you know, you send me the videos or you'll tell me a story if we meet live and we're working on this. But you need to really make sure you pay attention to the supplemental episode on it, because I'm going to give you some principles and skills that we'll be covering as you further your ability to speak. Richard Branson, I think it was, or maybe it was an article about him I just remember seeing in Inc. Magazine, just on how your organization needs a chief storyteller, like Richard Branson or a Phil Knight or whoever you would emulate or be inspired by. And, you know, that's something I said to you last year on this podcast. You have to emblazon the title of chief storyteller on your heart, mind, and psyche. Because, you know, the people that see the changes that need to be made and the people that tell those stories, right, those are the people that are moving the room. And as you develop yourself as a leader, eventually you want to develop people that see the reality and can tell the stories also, so that you're multiplying your impact, right? You develop yourself as you're being developed. But for now, do that for yourself. Practice telling stories places. Have a list of stories that you're gathering and, you know, using on a spreadsheet. And I'm going to go into that more on the supplemental episode, so I'll pause for now. So develop your storytelling ability to cater your approach. Number three, build awesome leadership environments. build awesome leadership environments. Now, how does this fit with catering your approach? Well, here's how this works. If you're going to cater your approach and meet people where they are, it is way easier to frame what you're asking people to do with you in this pursuit of the vision if there's already an environment in your organization that is celebrating and cultivating a leadership awareness. It's way easier in a team setting to go, guys, I know this is a big change I'm asking you to make, but remember, as we talk about in one of our core values, or as we talk about in our leadership training, change is always a part of what we do at blank X company. You need an environment that allows people's hunger to be taught and developed to be as fed as they want to be. Now, I look at the way that a lot of companies do leadership, and it's either one-off fad of the moment. Occasionally, you get big companies that do a big leadership development effort in their companies. And Harvard Business Review, McKinsey & Company, the consulting company, they've all come out with things that have basically said, here's why most of the time those don't work. They're not tied in to real work environments. It's not tied into the context of what people are doing every day. There's not a deep enough focus on mindset, being overdoing, and the people teaching it don't know how to guide people into becoming their own best gurus or own best leaders of themselves. And so that's why I'm so passionate about SiteShift. With SiteShift, I'm trying to help people become the best leaders for themselves. They learn to tap into their own internal compass, a shame-free intuition that they can harness and develop. We go deep into the mindset, we go deep into being overdoing, and we tie it into the real world life, the everyday life. And so if you are in charge of any kind of team or any kind of enterprise, this third application is build awesome leadership environments that are holistic, that help people actually know how to grow and develop as much as they want to be, that they can be as fed as they want to be in their leadership development. Because when you are bringing vision, it's a lot easier to bring vision to people that are already in motion than to try to get something going. So, four, this is how you cater your approach. If you're going to attune to the room, you're going to perceive, and then you're going to bring them into your message. Four, have the courage to sell. Have the courage to sell. Here's what I mean. When you're sharing the vision, you're selling the vision. And I don't mean that in a cheesy, gross, forced way. I mean, selling is a part of this. You want to stir up the problem that you are offering to solve. So if you're asking them to make a big change, right, you heard perceptively what their reality is. Describe that reality deeply. Stir up the problem and then offer your solution. Sadly, politicians tend to be great at this. It's how they get elected. I can't speak for what happens after they get elected, but they're really good at this and stirring up people's fears. You can do it better than stirring up people's fears. It takes a longer time to stir up a movement based on hope and love, but you can do it rather than fear. But you've got to stir up that problem that you're solving, then get into the solution. You got to think about your vision like it's a package, okay? You're putting something together. And then you're asking them to join you. It's a clear ask you're making. I had there's a place locally where I'll do a lot of meetings, and there tends to be a lot of homeless people around there, and it's hard. You see just this reality of struggle right in front of you, and you know, some people will hold up a sign. I've had people ask me with a lot of shame, and you can feel that shame when they ask. But then sometimes people ask with joy. I mean, like, hey, man, and there's a vivaciousness to them as they ask. There's no shame in their asking. They're not afraid to put themselves out there and just letting a sign do it. And I want to help all people equally in those situations because they're all struggling. But I'm being honest about it, human to human here with you on this podcast. I'm more inspired by the person that asks with joy. And the people you lead can't help but be otherwise. So you can just ask with a sign, you know, send out your email. Here's the memo. Ask with shame or ask with joy. You're giving people an opportunity, okay? Would you, you know, I think about this in my world. I live in a neighborhood. Would I walk across the street with enthusiasm to let them experience what I'm sharing, right? And then you're going to come back around to that vision, and you're going to keep casting it, keep casting it, keep casting it. And this goes to a bigger idea that I've hit on a number of times. Just a reminder here, people are the vision. Whatever vision you have, it's got to be about the betterment of people. That is the key idea. There's a reason work is changing so much right now in the world. You know, we're post the Henry Ford 40-hour factory model. So Henry Ford looked at people's lives and said, how long can they work before they're too tired and they get sloppy and make bad decisions? And you've got all these different movements. I'm going to say some of them wrong. Holacracy, the lean movement, the responsive org, rework, Simcoe style, sociocracy, which I would call socio-crazy, the teal movement, you know, all of these different movements that are trying to change how we think about work. And they all have strengths and weaknesses. And I could sum it all up this simply. If you want to be an effective leader, you're catering your approach, and you've got to be willing to sell your vision. And in selling your vision, just a reminder, people are the vision. Work is changing, and it's going to keep changing like crazy. And there's not going to be just one way to do it, but the guiding, you know, giant macro principle, people are the vision. Okay, fifth point of application here. Relax, because you're doing great. I'm not BSing you. I mean that authentically. You're trying. You're going after this. You're trying to increase your clarity, and you're not going to exponentially keep increasing your clarity equal to the need that you have to cast vision and to get people to join you where you are, unless you're relaxed. When you're uptight and rigid and forcing something and trying to make it happen, you're going to be confusing. And so I mean this so much. I wish at so many different points in my leadership, when I was like, am I doing it right? Am I doing it enough? Am I pushing too hard? Am I pushing too little, too wrong? Too fast, too slow, too active, too passive. I wish I could have come beside myself at many points and said, hey, Chris, take a deep breath, buddy. You're doing good. You're putting yourself out there and you're trying. Just keep taking the next courageous step and keep learning. And I say that to you, and I mean that. This fifth action that I'm going to ask you to take is just to relax. Enjoy this moment for what it is. You're doing great. You're trying to grow. Keep casting that vision. I've got the two supplemental episodes where I'll go into Empath Leader Sage more and speaking more. But for now, thanks for being here. Keep catering your approach, not how you want to share the vision, but how it needs to be shared in a way that it can be heard. Let me know if I can help. Have an awesome one. Peace.